You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system. On RadioAryan.com.
Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization podcast, right here on Radio Aryan, where thanks to wonderful listeners like yourselves, last week, the Roper Report received over 4,000 listens and downloads through RadioAryan.com, as well as hundreds more through various YouTube channels. So thank you for the listeners to the Roper Report, especially those who download the program through RadioAryan.com. We have a lot to talk about this week. I'm really busy right now in a happy way, even though it's been exhausting dealing with the media interviews as the smoke clears after Charlottesville. I know that all of my listeners have had an opportunity to read many accounts and watch many YouTube videos and live streams about what happened this past weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia, where many alt-right and white nationalist groups came together to protest the removal of the Robert E. Lee statue from Lee Park, which has now been renamed Emancipation Park. Those of you who've been regular listeners to the Roper Report podcast or readers of the Roper Report website blog at theroperreportsite.wordpress.com or theroperreport.whitenationalist.net are aware of the fact that for months I have been opposed to the Unite the Right rally. There's no secret about that. Likewise, there's probably very few of you who are not aware of the specific reasons why I opposed the Unite the Right rally. And on this podcast, I'm not going to rehash all of that. I'm not going to repeat myself. I will just simply let that lie. Because what happened this last weekend needs to be addressed, as does the fallout from it today. Obviously, there are different levels of experience when it comes to organizing protests and rallies and demonstrations. And I do apologize if during this podcast recording you hear phones ringing and notifications chiming because the media is continuing to contact me to request more interviews. But I will continue forward and deal with them later because you, my listeners to the Rope Report, are always my number one priority and my first, most important audience. What happened in Charlottesville requires some explanation. That explanation may be better done with some perspective that can only be provided with the distance of time. After that final analysis, we'll have a clearer idea of what went wrong. Like I said before, you've seen the live streams, you've seen the videos, you've read the accounts. You know that as soon as the groups of pro-white protesters arrived at Lee Park, that they were faced with a wall of Black Lives Matter activists and Antifa. They had to fight their way through, and many members of the League of the South and the Traditional Workers Party did so. Then they were attacked by the local Charlottesville Police Department as well as the Virginia State Police in their riot gear, and forced out of the park because they were pressed up against the Antifa, and obviously to defend themselves, well, violence did happen. The police then used that violence as an excuse to declare a state of emergency and that the park was closed down for an unlawful assembly. An unlawful assembly of people who had previously had a permit to be there. That was the excuse that was used. And then things went to heck because as they were forced to leave the park, unfortunately, because there was a lack of logistical planning of rendezvous points and primary and secondary and tertiary withdrawal routes, the different protesters became broken up into several different groups. Some of the speakers and organizers got into vehicles and left the area. And so these leaderless, directionless, lost guys from out of town had to do the best they could by themselves, not knowing where they're supposed to go or what they're supposed to do afterwards, and trying to find their way back to their cars, trying to get out of town. A lot of them were attacked again and again. You also have seen those videos, and you're aware of what I'm talking about. They had to defend themselves over and over again against both the police and the Black Lives Matter protesters, as well as the Antifa. Obviously, this could have been planned better. Obviously, better leadership could have been provided. But from the very beginning, the mayor of Charlottesville, as well as the governor of Virginia, were determined to make this rally be a failure. It was a trap that they had designed to destroy the pro-white demonstrators. It backlashed against them as much as it did the alt-right, because ultimately, it created a national media firestorm, and you've heard the buzz as much as I have, as even the president and the vice president and the attorney general have addressed the issue. And by the way, I told you so about Donald Trump. Can I just say that? I told you so. Oh, wait, one more time. I told you so. Back during the primary campaign, when everyone was jumping on the Trump train, I consistently told everyone that he was not our savior or our hero and he was not on our side. And that angered and upset many people, including perhaps some who are listening to this podcast, who were thinking that, oh, well, Trump is maybe not openly a white nationalist, but he is one of us. He's going to build a wall. No, he's not. Donald Trump, look at his family. I told you from the beginning, he is an enemy. We're not going to vote our way out of this mess, certainly not by any Republican who is just a steam pressure release valve to distract us from real action. So I told you so. Are you now getting the picture about Donald Trump after his speech today where he denounced white supremacists and Klan and Nazis and racists and talked about how America is founded on the idea that all people are created equal and that he would make sure that his federal law enforcement agencies supported the rights of all Americans? Yeah, get a hint. On the late freight, maybe, but people are jumping off the Trump train, and it's about time. We've been here waiting for you for a while. Glad you can catch up. So now the government and the controlled media are talking about this huge polarization in American society between white people and non-whites. You see, in non-white victim nomenclature, what they call intersectionalism, is the theory that all minorities are victims. And not only are all minorities victims, but all minorities have this intersectionality of shared victimhood by whites, and specifically white heterosexual males like me. Therefore, white privilege and the inherent racist nature of the United States of America, being, as they admit when they feel like it, founded of, by, and for white people by the founding fathers who were white nationalists, is inherently a racist state and must be deconstructed, just as white heritage and culture and history and identity must be deconstructed and destroyed. And by that, they mean to make us extinct. So let me tell you, these enemies of ours, they want every last little white girl to go to bed with a nigger. They want every last white child to be extinct. So we've got to expect, once we accept that, once we embrace that, we've got to expect to lose a few Twitter accounts along the way and have a couple people get fired from their jobs. They want your great-grandkids to be mulattoes. So yeah, we might get banned from Facebook on the way to having brown great-grandchildren. That might happen. That is nothing compared to what they will do to us once we stop fighting. Fortunately, all this doxing is awakening and enraging and radicalizing more and more people. I just got off the phone before I started this podcast recording with another media personality from Arkansas Public Radio. And I've been contacted over the last 24 hours by CNN and the Washington Post and the New York Times, and even internationally by an Irish radio station and by my local NBC and Fox TV affiliates and Little Rock and Fort Smith and Fayetteville television stations and newspapers from all over the state and country. And what I tell them is this: the effect of doxing people means that you're taking away everything that they have to lose. You're taking away their livelihood. In my case, over the last 24 hours, they have threatened my life continually. Before they suspended my Twitter account, I had probably 30 to 40 active, real death threats, and thousands, literally, threatening to have me fired and to make sure that I would never work again. But then they got really nasty, and they threatened my family. They threatened to kill and to rape my wife. And that's the kind of thing that starts a revolution. Now, if you want to see radicalization, if you want to see a revolution, if you want to see ropes hanging from lampposts, then that's how you get there. You take away everything that a guy has possibly to lose. You threaten his family. You threaten his life. And that radicalizes a guy. And that causes a backlash that they're not ready for. They're sowing a wind and they're going to reap the whirlwind. Literally. So what happened in Charlottesville? How did we get to this point over the last 48 hours? What's happened? Obviously, the mayor and the governor are anti-white. Could it have been handled better? Well, if the organizer of the Unite the Right rally had not gone to city council meetings with his phone blaring Tom Petty's I Won't Back Down as loud as it could play and running up to the podium with his arms raised like he was a marathon runner crossing a finish line and screaming and yelling and fighting with the mayor and the assistant mayor and giving media interviews where he called the city government and the police chief all kinds of names and insulted them. And if he had not been willing to, instead of compromising, instead of negotiating with them, he went to the federal level and got an injunction against their denial of the permit. Now, did they really deny the permit? What they said was, hey, you said 400 people are going to be here in this park, and now we're looking at thousands showing up. The park won't hold that. We have a larger park, McIntyre Park over here, that you can go to a little few blocks away. It's much larger, and we can provide security for you there. And he said, basically, F you. He said, forget about it. Lee Park or nothing. He went to the federal level. Now, that's very insulting. That's a challenge to the city. And obviously, they didn't like it too much. Now, we have to accept the fact that police, as well as the military, are going to be fighting for the status quo and against us every time. They're not going to be our friends. But I will say, in contrast to what happened in Charlottesville, I, about 2 months ago, had planned a demonstration against Sharia law. And in opposition to me, a huge counter demonstration was planned by Antifa and by social justice warriors and a large group of homosexuals. My original planned venue was denied. Now, I could have went through the court system or demanded that I have that original venue, and who knows what might have happened. That's not what I did. What I did was I went and met with the city chief of police, and I sat down with him in his office and very politely and cordially discussed our plans with them and working together with him and the Parks Department, because I also was holding this demonstration in a public city park. They worked out a nearby but separate secondary venue that I could have my demonstration in. And even though Antifa did show up and oppose us, and even though counter-demonstrators did outnumber us, in this case, in this scenario, where I chose to negotiate and to cooperate with the local police rather than showing my rear end and trying to grandstand, the police actually kept the Antifa back, and we successfully held our rally with no injuries and no arrest. I have no idea whether something similar might have happened in Charlottesville had the organization of the rally on the front end be handled differently. And I know that it's Monday morning quarterbacking, and it's unfair of me, perhaps, or unjust of me, from my perspective, after the event, to question how it was organized, had it not been for the fact that I was the guy questioning how it was being organized before the event, because I saw this coming. I knew it was going to be a cluster, just by who was organizing it and how it was being done, and all the different groups that were coming and arriving separately, without even a primary rendezvous point, and hoping they could find each other, and hoping they could withdraw together, having no idea what was going to happen, if A, then B. And it was astounding to me, thinking about the amount of money that the people organizing this rally have to throw at it, and how many supposed experts they have, and how big their organization and coalition is, that it was this poorly planned. I will say this, though. Despite the fact that the organization of the rally and the planning of it was sorely lacking, and despite the fact that some, not all, but some of the speakers and the organizers and leaders really abandoned their followers as soon as they left the park and left them to their own devices to wander around and be attacked, lost, directionless, and leaderless. Despite that, I have seen, as I'm sure you have, many examples through live stream videos and through written accounts of heroism. I saw League of the South members and Traditional Workers Party members and others manfully and honorably defending themselves and one another, singly, individually, and in small groups, as well as in groups of up to 50 or 100. I estimate, and Harold Covington also agrees with me on his estimation, he and I both have held far more demonstrations and protests than anyone who is in Charlottesville, and he and I both estimate the number of people on the alt-right side present in Charlottesville, Virginia, this last weekend, as being between 300 and 500. And that's based on our observation and the accounts that we've read. That's also based on the accounts of the organizers and the leaders of the rally itself. So that is respectable to get 300 to 500 white nationalists and alt-right, even under a big tent, whoever wants to come can come kind of tactic. That's pretty good. That's a respectable showing. And like I said, most of the men there were brave and courageous and fought well, fought very well. Many of them came prepared with shields, with sticks, with helmets, with other body armor. And man for man, person for person, per capita, our side kicked Antifa butt. I saw many examples of that. And so all respect, certainly, to the guys who were on the ground fighting. I just saw a video today of Nathan D'Amiga, who I have differences with and have publicly stated what those differences are. But I saw him doing something incredible. He and a small group of his Identity Europa guys were in one corner of a park, and the Virginia State Police in their riot gear were trying to forcefully push the Identity Europa guys and Nathan D'Amiga out of the park and into the Antifa where they'd be attacked. A lot of people would not fight back against state troopers in riot gear. They would turn and run. The Identity Europa guys and Nathan D'Amiga stood up shield to shield with the state troopers and pushed back. At the same time as they were explaining their position and reasoning with them, so that a few might perhaps someday be reached, thinking in hindsight, in retrospect, about what they did, what side they served, what was being said to them. But what they really accomplished was alienating and enraging many more of our people. Nathan, after being attacked and pushed back, finally was standing there, and he and three or four of his lead guys were sprayed directly in the face with a fog of pepper spray by the state troopers. And honestly, Nathan's face did not change expression. He and three or four of his guys walked forward through that cloud of pepper spray at the Virginia state troopers in their riot gear. And you know what happened? The state troopers backed away from him. Now, eventually they did push them out of the park and down the steps, but I was very impressed by that moment and by the about 6 minute long video that I saw of that courageous stand by Identity Europa and Nathan D'Amiga in the park. And I think that anyone who saw it would share my respect for the way they handled themselves, comported themselves like very brave men. And compared to the behavior of the Antifa and the Black Lives Matter, who were jumping around like a bunch of chimpanzees, the League of the South and the Traditional Workers Party also fought very well, very bravely. The organizers of this rally did not deserve to have such brave followers. They did not deserve to have such courageous men answer their call. However, the end result of Charlottesville, I don't believe, was negative. Because I've always said that polarization is necessary. Balkanization will happen. A civil war is going to happen. We're not going to have unity. People are recognizing after Charlottesville and then Seattle the next day that this country is coming apart at the seams. Now, I did not, as I said previously, go to Charlottesville for very widely understood and continually explained reasons. But I had my own little corner of drama that resulted from Charlottesville. There was a gentleman who attended the Unite the Right rally, and Friday night, whenever they had their mosquito holocaust and their citronella revival, where 6 million mosquitoes were killed, he went wearing a Arkansas Engineering t-shirt. And the gentleman who wore this Arkansas Engineering t-shirt happened to be a very attractive man. I'm a flaming heterosexual, but I can say, really objectively, that the guy was very ruggedly good-looking. And so because of that, a lot of people on the internet assumed that it was me and identified this guy who was at that Friday night torchlight procession as being me. And they eventually got to my Twitter page, and thousands of Antifa and SJWs and Black Lives Matter and antis began trolling my Twitter page. And they began saying they're going to dox me and have me fired and threatening me. And now they've begun down-repping and making negative comments on my books at Amazon.com, trying to get them removed from Amazon.com and from other online book retailers that carry them, and working very hard to see how they can hurt me. And then they began threatening me and my family and threatening my wife, as I mentioned. And I basically just told them, like I told the reporters just a few minutes ago, I honestly have nothing to lose. I am fearless. I am undoxable. And I have been so radicalized by left-wing enemies of our race that I will shoot them. I will kill them. And a judge may rule that I did so legally through justifiable self-defense, or the judge or the jury may rule that I committed murder and I'll go to prison. But whether I am let off free or whether I go to prison, that will be one dead anti-white, at least. And that will set a precedent if it happens, and that will give them an example if it happens. But if they want to throw their lives away against us, then we'll see which side is more committed. We'll see which side is willing to go to the wall and be completely ruthless, go all the way with this. I don't think that they are as dedicated and committed as we are, and I certainly know that after this last weekend in Charlottesville, more of our men are more dedicated and more committed and more ruthless and more unforgiving than ever before. Some of them got a taste of blood. They liked it. And so this radicalization of the alt-right into full-blown white nationalism, far exceeding their left-wing leaders and organizers, is a great thing. I saw in the faces of these young men in Charlottesville this last weekend a hunger to fight back, a joy of battle, really having a good time with it. I know that feeling. I understand it completely. The left does not. Liberals do not. You know, some men have an instinct to fight, and some men do not. Most of the guys who are in Charlottesville have that healthy, natural instinct to fight. Some did not. One guy, the day after Charlottesville, decided that he was going to go to the Charlottesville Police Department and give a press conference by himself because the TWP guys who are going to be his escorts and protectors, well, he told them that they could not go with him if they took any of their gear that had the TWP logo on it as their defensive tools, and all of their defensive armor and shields do, so he went by himself. And they said that they thought that he sought martyrdom. Wanting to be a martyr, or because he was so upset emotionally, so crushed at what happened over the weekend, that he went to the Charlottesville Police Department to hold this press conference, and a near riot broke out, and he was rushed, and he got punched. Now, like I said, some guys have an instinct to fight back if they get attacked. I have lost a lot of fights. I've won a lot of fights, too. But even the fights I've lost, I always try to fight back. I may get knocked down, but I try to get up again. I may get hit, but I try to punch back. To me, that's instinct. It doesn't matter whether you win or lose. It's that instinct a man has to fight back. This guy at the press conference, he didn't have that instinct. He got punched and he bunched his arms in to his chest in a defensive posture and started trying to get away. And the police took him inside the station because he couldn't make it back to his car. It kind of reminds me of another of the organizers and leaders of this event who is giving a speech on camera and gets sucker punched and prances half a block away and fixes his hair instead of hitting back. I don't understand. I'm sorry, I don't comprehend. I cannot relate to that mentality, that instinctual lack of self-preservation, that instinctual lack of masculine will to just, without thinking about it, without weighing it or measuring it or thinking about the optics, punching back if you get punched. To me, that's what a man does. And somebody that does not do that is not a man. I don't know of any animal that would be attacked and not fight back, except for one that was completely neutered and used to submission. But be that as it may, I saw in the faces and the actions of a lot of the men who fought in Charlottesville this weekend that instinctual will to fight back for themselves and for their families and for their race collectively. And I was proud of what I saw in most cases. I was pleasantly surprised by the way that most of the men in Charlottesville comported themselves. And that, of course, makes it easier when you lose your Twitter account. It makes it easier when you get fired from your job working for the hot dog company, as Mr. White did. It makes it easier to talk to the media without fear and to describe yourself literally as being fearless and having nothing to lose that you value higher than your honor and your courage and your identity as a white man. Because literally, that's all we have. They can take everything else away from us. But as long as we keep our honor, as long as we behave with courage, we ultimately will win. They will lose. And they know this. But they are so stupid in other aspects. They don't understand that by doxing people, they radicalize them. They take them out of the mainstream. They put them in a position where they have nothing left to lose. They don't even see that, for example, where they crush our First Amendment rights, they make our Second Amendment necessary. John F. Kennedy said that people who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution necessary. And we saw last month in northern Germany, a country where all the things I've said over the last 20 minutes would have me in prison. They had a skinhead concert and 5,000 skinheads showed up, proud to be identified as National Socialist White Nationalist. In a country where just being there probably got most of them fined or put in jail. They did not care. 5,000 of them in a country the size of Texas with no freedom of speech whatsoever, because there, those draconian anti-free speech laws have separated the men from the boys. All the hobbyists, all the game players have already gone home. Just the real guys are left. The serious guys. The guys who either have nothing to lose or know that, to the contrary, everything that we value is up for loss. Everything that we value is up for loss if we do nothing, if we do not fight back. I'm really impressed by Charlottesville also because it is once again put into the national media spotlight race and civil war and balkanization, and the way that America is coming apart at the seams. So it did not bother me at all when they began threatening me and talking about doxing me and my Twitter account got suspended. What was the net effect? Well, I got a lot of media coverage, a lot of interviews. My book sales went through the roof. I've sold more books in the last 48 hours because of this attention that I have in the previous 2 months combined, and that's even before a lot of these media interviews hit the mainstream press, which is going to get even more attention to my books. And, you know, the Antifa can downvote and put negative reviews on as many of my books on Amazon as they want to and try to pressure Amazon into removing them. I have books published other places aside from Amazon, folks. And if they take them down from Amazon, there are four or five other places if they're already up, in second editions even. So if they cannot, shut me up. The only way, like I told the media today, that they're going to shut me up is to kill me. And that's not going to be quite as easy as they think. I'm not going to go down without a fight. I'm going to do my best to take a lot of them with me when that happens. In the meantime, my book sales are going through the roof. Hits to my website are exponentially higher than ever. I'm going to be frank with you. I don't engage in hyperbole. I don't exaggerate. The traffic that I normally get to the Roper Report blog sites is normally between 300 or 400 independent visitors a day on a weekday. Weekends are a little bit higher. On a normal day, 300 to 400, maybe as high as 500, depending on how interestingly titled one of the articles are. Yesterday, 3,485 independent individual visitors to the Roper Report website. Today, about halfway through the day, already close to 2,000. So, thank you, little people. I appreciate it. And you're helping out with the book sales and the website traffic. And frankly, I love the publicity as long as they spell my name right. I don't care what they say about me. So, I'm one of those guys. I'm fearless because I've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. And literally, I don't mind being the martyr. And that's why when they contacted me saying, hey, were you the guy in Charlottesville? I played a game with them. I confused them. I alternately denied and confirmed that it was me and put them on a wild goose chase, muddying the waters on purpose because I wanted to buy some time for the guy who was there. Whoever he was, and I honestly don't know who he is, whoever he was, I wanted to distract them from his trail and give him an opportunity, as much as one can, to prepare for his potential doxing. And I hope they don't find out who he was. I hope that he gets through this without being identified. But if they do find him, I hope that I was able to buy him 24 hours or so to prepare himself however he can for what they're going to do to him. One of the reporters asked me if I was afraid for him. And I said, yes, I am afraid for him because look what they did to me. And I wasn't even there. They've been threatening me and threatening my family. And I wasn't there. So I'm sure they'll do the same to him. Whatever his depths and radicalization of views are, he might just be an alright guy who is not a national socialist or a white nationalist per se. But they're still going to threaten to kill him and rape his wife if he has one. They're still going to threaten to get him fired from his job and fine him and beat him up or to tell all his friends and family what his political views are, regardless of how strong and radical his views are, which are going to make them stronger and more radical. So, hey, if you want a race war, good job. This is how you get a race war. But I told them that not only am I afraid for him, and that's why I took the heat for it. That's why I stepped forward and said, yes, me. To confuse them. Because I wanted to buy him time and I don't really care. They can't dox me. They can't do anything to me. But also I'm afraid, I told the media, not just for him, but for every white person, for every white woman and child. And the reporter that I spoke to last is a woman who came out to our anti-Sharia demonstration. She's a white woman who was heavily pregnant. And I said, I'm not trying to get too personal with you, but I also am afraid for every white child born this year who is going to grow up being a minority in the country which was built of and by and for their people, for them. Because their future is going to be like the future of whites in the former Rhodesia, it's now Zimbabwe. It's going to be like the future of whites in South Africa today. They're going to find out that other races do not treat their minorities as well as we have treated ours. And so I fear for their future. I fear for the future of every white person, if they are racist or not, who has to fear for their lives just to leave their house, to go to the store to get groceries and a lot of major American cities in broad daylight. They have to fear for their lives. Have to fear for their safety. That's wrong. That's evil. It's unjust. It's not fair. And I am afraid for the future of our grandchildren. I don't want them to be mulattoes. I don't want them to be brainwashed into being homosexuals either. So that fear, without a proper release, putting people's back up against a wall with nothing to lose, nothing to face except extinction, that's how you get a race war. So keep it up, left. You did a good job in Charlottesville. Forcing the Unite the Right rally to get violent so you can shut it down. Well, the effect of that is a backlash which now reverberated across the nation and really around the world. It's become much larger than it would have been if you just let them do their thing. And now people like me are involved and hundreds of others. A lot of people see how the left behaves with their doxing. And by the way, I want you to check out the Roper Report website. There's a guy named Logan James Smith. Now, Mr. Smith is a greasy, hook-nosed kike who lives in Raleigh, North Carolina. And we've got him. The Jew who's been doxing all the people who were in Charlottesville, Logan James Smith of Raleigh, North Carolina, has now been doxed himself. We have his picture and his wife's picture and their home address and their phone numbers and their mom's and their dad's addresses and their home phone numbers and all their social media. We know where they live, where they work. We know what color underwear they put on this morning. And now so does the whole world. So that doxing thing, you know, hey, Logan, that goes both ways, bud. Hope you and your wife enjoy it. Like I said, they sowed a wind, and now they're going to reap a whirlwind. So thank you to the 8chan guys who've completely doxed Logan James Smith, the guy who tried to dox all of the attendees at the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally. That brings me to a question that, before the Charlottesville rally happened, one of my listeners asked me to answer. Basically, is there such a thing as a good Jew? And why do Jews try to enter white nationalism? Well, to be controlled opposition. People like, you know, Jerry Bello, Pax Dickinson's court Jew, as he calls himself, so that they can be controlled opposition, so that they can co-opt it, so they can direct it, so they can make sure that there's nothing that they don't have their grubby little Jew fingers in. That's why they join every organization, every civic club they can, to make sure that nothing is going on they don't know about. They can steer it, they can make it powerless and impotent that way, by having control over it. Are there such a thing as a good Jew? There are Jews who are not involved in any kind of global conspiracy against the white race or anybody else for that matter. There are Jews who just work their jobs and live their lives and aren't even involved in anything political. There are Jews who are not meeting in some secret Kabbalistic group. There are Jews who probably don't have a malevolent intent towards the white race at all. But once again, it's genetics that matters. It's not their intent. I don't judge people based on the content of their character. I judge them based on their identity because, folks, this is not the era of ideological politics. This is identity politics on both sides, and that's how America is going to be divided. So no based blacks or Asians or Jews are going to be allowed in our new white nation. Can promise you that. There are plenty of white nationalists like myself who will kill or die to make sure that they are not allowed. Not a single one of them. And people don't like it, they can go with them. And they can become tomato fertilizer, just like the good Jews, the righteous Jews, the Jews that don't hate whites. But once again, I really don't care. So no, there are no good Jews. There are some benign Jews, just like there are some benign tumors that may not be malignant, that may not be cancerous, spreading their poison throughout the white nation's body politic, to use the analogy. But those benign tumors, those non-political Jews, still have to be excised. They still have to be cut out and thrown away. They have to be separated from us. And they can be good Jews in their own country, until we get an opportunity to narrow the play-in brackets, and step forward once more into the future, onto the rope over the abyss. Until then, they can go be good Jews in Israel as far as I care. But no, as far as I'm concerned, there are no good Jews. I was attending an anti-war rally in Little Rock probably 15 years ago, and the anti-war protesters were angry with us because we were a National Socialist, a bunch of skinheads. And they said, "Oh, my father-in-law is a good Jewish person." I said, "Is he dead yet?" Because that's the only good Jews I know, the ones who are already dead. Otherwise, they're useless to me, and even worse, they're our enemies. We have to get over this idea of being compassionate, tolerant, and merciful to our enemies. The worst Achilles heel that the white race has is our disproportionate and unhealthy sense of altruism. And it developed in Northern Europe, where you have to take care of the weak and the sick and the old and the little young kids, because the harsh Northern European environment would kill them off if they did not have help. And so that became hardwired into our instincts to have that kind of altruism and compassion and empathy. And that's great. It's not necessarily a feminine quality. It's a great quality to have as far as focusing on your in-group. That's what National Socialism is based on, taking care of your own, taking care of the weak and the helpless, looking after those who cannot take care of themselves for the greater good of the whole. But when it's focused on the out-group, when it's focused on the other, on the stranger, on the enemy, on the foreigner, then it ceases to become that great thing that keeps crying babies from being thrown out into the snow at 3 a.m., and it becomes, well, what we have today, where women of both genders are dedicated to promoting the extinction of their own race in order to feed kids in Africa and bring Muslim kids here and destroying people like me and you who don't want to see that happen. They want to dox us. They want to get us fired. They want to threaten us. They cheer on those who do. And they don't recognize that what they're doing is radicalizing us all, making us ruthless, giving us no reason whatsoever to show any further altruism or compassion to them. And that's right where we need to be. So these hobbyists that lack any stamina, don't have any staying power, they're good for one project, then they want to sit back on the laurels, need to really develop the stamina to stick with this fight, not just for one weekend, but for the good of all of our people, for good. They need to be committed and have discipline. They need to understand that when it comes to a steak and egg breakfast, we're not the chicken dedicated laying the egg. Hey, we've got some skin in this game. We're the cow. We're so committed. We're providing the steak. Completely committed to the game. People who can't follow through a simple task, who can't follow directions, who will not be disciplined, who have no loyalty and are easily distracted. People who want to follow fads or popular trends or whatever leader or organizer has the most people on their social media accounts, are the most money in the bank because they inherited it. People who are LOLbergs and just all jokes all the time, who do nothing serious and lack any conviction and dedication for anything real, they will fall away as things get more serious, just like they have in Europe. They will find another hobby, something a lot less risky, and those left will be those who are harder, those like me with no fear and nothing left to lose. You know, in Nietzsche's allegory of the coal and the diamond. Coal and diamond are both made out of carbon. And so one day they're sitting together, the coal and the diamond, and the coal says to the diamond, "You know, my brother, Diamond, you and I are both made from the same thing. Why are you so hard?" The diamond turns to the coal and says, "Oh, my brother, why so soft? Why so soft?" The hobbyist, the game players, the LOLbergs will be washed away, be forgotten. We will forget their names. Even the organizers and the leaders and the spokespersons are not going to hang around when things get tough. But new people will step up to leadership positions and to the front lines of our struggle, and they will fight this fight for their future and for the future of their children and other white people's children. And as we forget the corrupt impurity spiralers, as their names are lost to history, we will remember those who have character and standards and integrity and principles. But most of all, we will remember those who have the courage to stick it out, whether the president or the attorney general or the vice president or some mayor or governor likes it or not, whether they bring out the state police in riot gear against us or the National Guard. From here on out, things are only going to get much more real And I want all of you who hear this to be prepared to accept that and to be with me, to be with all of us for the long haul. So decide now if you're really in this for your race, if you're willing to kill or die for your people if it came down to it. If not, then you'd find another hobby. Because if you weren't watching the news this weekend in Charlottesville, let me tell you, things are about to get real. And I love it. Now, as you may have heard, I didn't include a lot of audio. I didn't include a lot of songs. Things were too important to be discussed. More important than making you laugh. More important than amusing you or entertaining you. Hopefully, if you're anything at all like me, if you're any use to your people at all, you got all the entertainment that you needed watching the video of other guys fighting in Charlottesville for people who did not deserve to have people that brave answering their call. And hopefully, if you are made of the kind of stuff that our ancestors were made of, if you want to fight to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children, you'll get involved now locally to meet people in real life, in your community, boots on the ground, for some grassroots activism to work together. We very well could lose the internet any day, folks. The Department of Justice could crack down on all social media and emails and make it very hard for us to communicate. You know it could happen. It's happened before. If that happens, how many people do you know within a tank of gas? How many people do you know in person that you can stand with if you needed someone to stand with? The purpose of the Shield Wall Network, my coalition of white nationalist preppers, is to make it possible for us to continue this movement and to expand it and to prepare for our success locally through teaching you how to become a person of influence in your community today so that we can have mutual aid and assistance for one another tomorrow. Go to the Shield Wall Network website at shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com. Google Shield Wall Network or email me, roper_billy@yahoo.com. Once again, that's roper_billy@yahoo.com. In case we lose the internet completely, write down my mailing address, P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. That's P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. I do not know how much longer we have before we lose the internet. I do not know how much longer we have before this war goes hot. But I do know that I would like to have all of you stand with your own white brothers and sisters locally in real life when that happens. Once again, for the Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, on Radio Aryan, I want to thank you for your time today. Last week's program on Radio Aryan had over 4,000 downloads, and I hope that this week's has a similar audience. I want to encourage you to visit the Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization blog, at theropereport.whitenationalist.net or theropereportsite.wordpress.com and email me, write to me, learn how you can become a person of influence in your community to fight for our people and what after this weekend we now know is definitely coming. As I tell you each week, think racially, act locally, but no matter what, keep it white.
Deutschland, Sieg Heil! Deutschland, Sieg Heil!
Today's episode of The Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, was brought to you as always by RadioAryan.com, as well as the numbers 14 and 88 and the letter H. And now, joining our sponsorship roster, the letter X. The letter X now apparently being a symbol of everything Confederate and therefore evil and racist and right in line with our program here at The Rope Report. If you'd like to join the numbers 14 and 88 and the letter H and X in helping to sponsor The Rope Report, then we encourage you to send your generous non-tax-deductible contributions through Welcome Sealed Cash, check, or money order made out to me, Billy Roper, to P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. Once again, that's P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. If you prefer to help out through PayPal to support The Rope Report or to fund the Cover Our People With Love pro-white charity, then you can use PayPal, sending a gift to roper_billy@yahoo.com. Once again, through PayPal, that's roper_billy@yahoo.com, which if you can guess, is also my email address. If you have any questions which you'd like to have answered on next week's program of The Rope Report, I encourage your feedback and your constructive criticism as well as your flattery. Roper_Billy@yahoo.com. The Cover Our People With Love helps provide handmade quilts and blankets to newborns as well as white children who are taken out of abusive and neglectful homes and put into foster care or into new loving families. It also helps provide that comfort to white elderly people who have been abandoned in nursing homes and are no longer visited or remembered by any of their family or friends. We have an outreach to the community to help provide food and gently worn clothing to those who are in need in our 97% white community and in yours. So if you know someone who is a needy white person, especially a white family that is struggling financially and have children, we'd like to help. Please write to us and tell us who they are and what they need and how we can help them. If you have a few extra dollars and would like to contribute those, or if you have some gently used clothing or even yarn or fabric for quilting, making blankets for them, then we encourage you to send those as well. Once again, that address is P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. To send any gently used clothing or the material that we can use for the Cover Our People With Love pro-white charity. You can read all about the ongoing projects of the Cover Our People With Love charity through their website, coverourpeoplewithlove.wordpress.com. Once again, the Cover Our People With Love pro-white charity at coverourpeoplewithlove.wordpress.com. The Cover Our People With Love pro-white charity is an operation of the Shield Maidens and my wife, Tina Roper. The Shield Maidens is a women's auxiliary group of the Shield Wall Network, which is a white nationalist preppers coalition teaching you how to become a person of influence in your community today, as well as encouraging grassroots political activism for the sake of our entire race. If you'd like to find out more about the Shield Wall Network, you can go to its website, shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com. Once again, to find out more about becoming a person of influence in your community and joining the growing Shield Wall Network, you can go to the Community Grassroots Patriotic Outreach Organization's website at shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com. Find out more by Googling the Shield Wall Network, if that was too fast for you to write down. For Christian identity women who are looking for fellowship with other women of faith, the new Daughters of Eve Christian Identity Women's website is now up. The Daughters of Eve website is daughtersofeveblog.wordpress.com. Once again, that is the daughtersofeveblog.wordpress.com. You can Google Daughters of Eve Christian Identity Women's Group, or go directly to the Daughters of Eve blog.wordpress.com today. I also like to remind you that coming up at the end of September, the 29th, 30th, and 31st, you can join Dr. David Duke, myself, Billy Roper, Don Black, and Sam Dixon in Eastern Tennessee at the 2017 Stormfront Conference. If you're already a member of Stormfront, then you can send a private message to Don Black, or you can email him at don.black@stormfront.org. Once again, that's don.black@stormfront.org. And if you have not yet, you can now. Sign up for Stormfront.org with a profile yourself, and then by instant messaging Mr. Black on Stormfront.org, you can be added to the private discussion of the preparations and planning for the 2017 Stormfront Conference to be held September the 29th, 30th, and 31st in Eastern Tennessee. Once again, you can join for an entire weekend Dr. David Duke, Don Black, Billy Roper, and Sam Dixon, as well as others, for a weekend that you will never forget of true white nationalist camaraderie and education. That's the Stormfront 2017 Eastern Tennessee Conference, September the 29th, 30th, and 31st. For details, go to stormfront.org.
Deutschland, Siegerin! Deutschland, Siegerin! Deutschland, Siegerin!
This special message and request goes out to all white nationalist and alt-right supporters who like reading books, especially books where, for a change, the good guys win. You know, the kind of books that they don't want you to read. If you like those kind of books with a happy ending, then I encourage you to support Billy Roper's books by going to Amazon.com and fighting back against the Antifa and Black Lives Matter. What they have done through their doxing attempts after the Charlottesville rally is to try to get people fired, to try to take away their livelihood and their jobs. For an author such as myself, that means trying to get my books removed from Amazon.com. That means downvoting falsely each of my 14 fiction and nonfiction books, all of which put forward the white nationalist message. The method that the Antifa and Black Lives Matter have been using is to post false negative reviews, especially over the last 24 hours, which they have never read these books, and they're hoping to either discourage you from buying my books or through lobbying Amazon.com to actually have them removed and have Amazon no longer carry them. And while it is true that my books have been published through other venues and are available through Lulu.com as well as through Barnes & Noble booksellers online and Booksamillion.com, my primary source of royalty as sales revenue from my books, my income derives from Amazon.com book sales. They are attempting to deprive me of my income as an author, just as they have attempted to, and in some cases been successful in, getting other alt-right and white nationalists fired. I don't think they'll be successful. I think that white nationalists and alt-right supporters will help support those of us who are being attacked. If you'd like to help out, you can go to Amazon.com, type in Billy Roper, and read the description of any of my 14 books there. I encourage you to buy either a Kindle ebook or a print paperback version of any of my 14 fiction or nonfiction books. Get white-pilled, and then leave an honest, constructive, uplifting, positive review on Billy Roper's books at Amazon.com. Thank you very much for supporting white nationalists and the alt-right who are under attack by our enemies. Let us all stand together, and together we will see victory.
Can you hear the student band? I think they're getting out of hand. Will you know what happened to those who complain? We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right, 'cause the fireworks aren't to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We'll set a wedding full of clowns, and we'll kick them while they're down. Give the banks control, 'cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America.
You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.